This is Polyphonic Press, the podcast where two music fans pick a classic album completely at random. Using the patented random album generator, they are given an album to review from a curated list of over 1,000 classic releases, spanning multiple genres. And now onto the show. Here are your hosts, Jeremy Boyd and John Van Dyke.
Hey, welcome to Polyphonic Press. I'm Jeremy Boyd.
And I'm John Van Dyke.
And let's not waste any time. We've got the patented random album generator right in front of us here. So let's hit the button and see what album we're going to be listening to this week.
The album you will be listening to this week is Whitney Houston, Whitney Houston.
So this would be, about 1988 or something that this came out? Probably. All right. This would be probably your first album, is what I'm saying.
I would imagine so. Well, it says Whitney Houston's self-titled debut album, released on February 14th, 1985, introduced the world to one of the most powerful and iconic voices in music history. Blending pop, R&B, and soul, the album showcased Houston's extraordinary vocal talent and set the stage for her legendary career. Featuring timeless hits like How Will I Know, Saving All My Love for You, and Greatest Love of All, the album was both a critical and commercial success, spending 14 weeks at number one on the Billboard 200 and eventually selling over 22 million copies worldwide. The record's lush production, courtesy of Clive Davis and a team of top-tier producers, perfectly complemented Houston's emotive and technically flawless voice. With this album, Whitney Houston not only redefined pop and R&B, but also broke barriers, becoming the first debut album by a female artist to produce 3 number one singles on the Billboard Hot 100. It remains a landmark release symbolizing the arrival of a once-in-a-generation talent and setting a new standard for vocal excellence in popular music. So, yes, so the album was released on February 14th, 1985. The genres are pop, soul, dance, and R&B. Label is Arista Records, and produced by Jermaine Jackson, Kashif, Michael Masser, Narada Michael, and there are 10 songs on the album, and it's, I think, it's split pretty evenly between side one and side two, 5 and 5. So if you're listening along, which we encourage you to do, and we've linked the album to both Spotify and Apple Music in the show notes, so you can listen to it with us on your preferred streaming service. The album starts with the song "You Give Good Love," and will stop after the fifth track, which is "Nobody Loves Me Like You Do." So if you want to pause it at that song, and we'll be discussing at the halfway point. And so without further ado, let's get it queued up here. Okay, so here is the first song on the album, "You Give Good Love." So here we go. Okay, and ending side one with "Nobody Loves Me Like You Do," duet with Jermaine Jackson. This is, it's not my favorite kind of music. It's a little bit too pop for my taste, but I can appreciate it. I have a few things to say. I think my favorite song so far is probably "Saving All My Love for You," because that the other songs, it did almost didn't feel like it was her album. It felt like she was sort of, it was the producers making all the decisions or something. That was the only song I felt, it felt like it was hers. The others sort of felt like she was just sort of almost not the main focus in a way. There isn't really anything wrong with the album. It's just not quite my favorite thing.
Yeah, it's not my cup of tea really either. It's some of the stuff is a little too schmaltzy for me. I thought Someone for Me was kind of funky. It wasn't too bad. A lot of the stuff has definitely got that mid-80s sort of, well, what we would now call sort of vaporwave sort of sound to it.
It does, yeah.
It's, the DX7's all over it, and a couple of places I heard, like, fretless bass and stuff like that, and, you know, it's fine to use these things, but it's just, it's very of its time in that way.
Yeah, it's very, it's, if someone were making, like, if a producer was saying, okay, give me 80s, what does the 80s sound like? It's like everything that's here is what you would yeah. use. And this is 85, right? So it's like right in the middle of the decade. So
smack dab in the middle of the decade. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like, if this is like the most 80s album I think we've done so far, honestly.
Probably. Yeah. There's a few albums I can think of that we did that were 80s that didn't quite necessarily sound. They didn't have that.
The cliche. The
cliches all over it. That's the word.
I don't know. It's one of the, I mean, she's, there's no question that she's an amazing singer. Like, she's got an incredible voice, and she's known for this incredible voice. And, you know,
probably one of the best of her time.
Honestly. Yeah. Really, she is. And, but I always like that sort of style. Like that, the Whitney Houston, Mariah Carey, Celine Dion, that those sort of types of singers, I just never really got into. It's just never. It's like,
yeah, it's hard to connect with. It's just, it's not aimed at us.
Yeah, and it's like, it's a technically perfect voice. For this style, it's more like a performance, and not necessarily, they're not really feeling the lyrics in a way, like it doesn't feel as personal, and a lot of it is because somebody else wrote the song, but it doesn't feel like it feels like they're just singing the song as part of their job, if that makes sense.
I mean, sometimes these songs can be very personal, and you know, and she does put feeling into her voice, or into the songs that she does, and I think I know what you mean. The message, I mean, they're mostly love songs. In fact, I can't, there's nothing against Nazis or something like that.
No. Although I'm sure if she were asked.
I'm sure she would ask, yeah. I'm just saying it's not exactly a political album or anything like that, which is fine. I mean, not everything has to be, but it's a difference. It's definitely geared to a completely different type of audience. It's not.
You're right. It is absolutely aimed at a completely different audience. And I think we're not the audience for it. It's just like, I can though appreciate it for what it is. Like, I'm not saying I don't think it's bad or anything like that. I'm not saying that at all. When she does a song like, well, I think her best performance is probably the song I Will Always Love You, which is probably like that song. I do feel like she really did put a lot of her feeling into it. And,
yeah, that's definitely, that's classic.
And I think maybe a lot of it is because like this, that was like 5 years after this, maybe more. I think that was like 92. So like 7 or 8 years.
7 years. Yeah.
So I think, but she was only like 21 or 22 when she recorded. When she recorded this album. So a lot of it is probably because like her voice and her, a lot of the reason that I said like the song, Saving All My Love for You was the one song where I felt like it was hers, is because it was closer to that, putting that feeling into it, like it, that I Will Always Love You. The production on the other songs, like the funkiness you were talking about, I enjoyed that aspect of it, but I didn't feel like it was, those were her songs. So it just didn't feel like it was her album. And I think it's because this is just sort of her debut album. She's just sort of still kind of figuring out who she is as a singer and what kind of artist she's going to be. And she's sort of trying different things out.
Yeah. No, I do believe that definitely plays a factor. It's a debut album, and she was sort of fresh in the industry at the time. At least as a solo performer. I think I heard she used to do backup vocals for, you know, before that, probably. I don't know.
Yeah, it says she's been active since 1977.
Wow, she would have been really young.
Houston's professional career began when she joined her mother's band as a background singer at 14, while CeCe performed at Manhattan Cabaret Clubs. Houston gave her first solo during CeCe's performance at Manhattan Town Hall in February 1978. So yeah, I guess her mom was a singer in cabaret clubs in New York City. So that's sort of where she started singing. And so yeah, she was really young. She was born in 63. So she would have been in 78, she would have been 15 starting out. So yeah,
well, it said that she was 14.
So 14 in 77, but her first solo debut was,
okay,
in
it was 15. So wow,
yeah.
she definitely didn't take long for people to recognize her voice at that time. But yeah, her first debut album. I mean, a lot of albums, you know, I find a lot of pop albums, especially, there's a lot of filler on it, because again, there's like one or two or maybe three, if you're lucky, songs on it that really do belong to the artist, but they got to fill an album. So it winds up having a lot of, you know, to be not nice about it, it's filler. But it's, you know, it's not like there's no redeeming qualities to some of the other stuff at all. Like, again, I thought Someone For Me was kind of a, you know, funky. Like, if you're going to have fun with it, I mean, it could be kind of fun. I mean, yeah, who doesn't want to do something with a funky bass line every once in a while? So...
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm all for funky bass lines. but I did manage to, there were a few facts about the album that I did manage to find. So the album didn't become an immediate hit upon its release. It took nearly a year to gain momentum, but once it did, it dominated the charts, spending 14 weeks at number one on the Billboard 200 and becoming one of the best-selling debut albums of all time. So yeah, I guess it took a while for it to, for the general public to sort of catch on to it.
Well, sometimes something lingers for a while because it didn't get like promotion or something like that right off the bat. And then it just sort of hangs around, and the little promotion it does do take, you know, it catches on, and there's a couple of people out there goes, oh yeah, this is really good, you should listen to this. And sometimes it takes a little while for that to hang on. I mean, it's a little unusual because, you know, most things, you need that immediacy of its like initial release to sort of be the catalyst to actually shove it into the you know, top charts and stuff like that. But it's surprising. Sometimes something will linger for a little while before it actually catches up.
Well, you know, and that's really the big difference between how the music industry was back then versus today.
I don't know if an album can linger for a while before it catches on.
Exactly. The record company would just stop promoting it, you know, But back then, they really nurtured artists, and
yeah,
if they believed in an artist, it's like, no, it'll catch on eventually. Just, you know, keep trying. But
the 80s and 90s was sort of like the beginning of the end of that.
Yeah, it really was. So the album had three number one singles. The album made history as the first debut by a female artist to produce three number one singles on the Billboard Hot 100, Saving All My Love for You, How Will I Know, and Greatest Love of All. And the song How Will I Know, which I think is the biggest hit from the album, it was originally written for Janet Jackson. It was almost given to her, but after she passed on it, the song found its way to Whitney Houston and to became one of her signature songs.
Which one was that?
How Will I Know. It's the one that's
coming up. Oh, it's
up.
The... Yeah. Yeah, okay.
And Saving All My Love for You won Best Female Pop Vocal Performance at the 1986 Grammy Awards, marking Houston's first Grammy win and solidifying her as a powerhouse vocalist. Yeah, and by 2009, the album had sold over 22 million copies worldwide, making it one of the best-selling debut albums ever and proving Houston's lasting impact on pop and R&B. And 22 million, that's huge.
That's pretty big.
Yeah. Not very many albums get to that.
No. That is something to say about, a pop record, is that it can really bring in the numbers.
Yes, it can.
It's, again, not really aimed at me, but it's obviously aimed at a lot of people, so.
But, I guess we'll get back into the second side of the album. But before we do that, let's hear from our friend Jess over at Music Notes with Jess. So check that out.
Hi, I'm Jessica Ann Katina. I've always loved music and surround myself with it every day. I've sung in choirs, took digital musical classes in college, and used to work in radio. To further share my knowledge and experience with others, I created this podcast, Music Notes with Jess, in 2019. I'm so fortunate of the listener growth and hearing back from some of the celebs I discussed in past episodes. That's why now I'm ready to expand. So let's have fun taking weekly music notes of throwbacks, modern hits, and media. Thank you. Talk to you soon on Music Notes with Jess.
We'll now take a few seconds before we begin side two. Thank you. Here's side two.
Okay, and ending the album with Hold Me Tight, a duet with Teddy Pendergrass. This album, I don't really know what else to say about it. It's okay. I can appreciate her voice for what it is. She's a great singer, but and there's a few okay songs, some things that I can sort of not hate. I don't hate the album. I don't hate it. It's not my favorite.
Yeah, there was a couple of songs that are definitely more of a higher quality than some of the other ones. I'm not a huge fan of like the schmaltzy ones. Her voice blends really well with the people that she's duetting with, Jermaine Jackson and Teddy Pendergrass. The songs, I thought Take Good Care of My Heart was the least schmaltzy of the three, duet songs. The other ones were definitely a little too, I don't even
sappy,
know the word.
A little too,
a little too sappy for me. I've never liked that. The sound of the electric piano in the 80s was one of those sounds that kind of grates on me.
Yeah.
And I like the sound. It's like they took, I get what they were. The sound of the electric piano has got like this natural grit to it. And when they take that grit out of it, it just sounds too, it's the word isn't even clean. It just sounds too sanitized to me anyway.
Yeah. Well, that's the weird thing too, is the, like on a Fender Rhodes, there is a knob on it, and the sound in that sound was always available. But for some reason in the '80s, they dialed the knob to the other way. In the '70s, it was one way. And then the '80s, they turned the knob the other way.
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of, I prefer the grittier sound to on those things. I would have picked a completely different instrument if I'm going for something cleaner. Like the sound of a regular piano sounds better to me in like a clean setting.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with just a regular piano. I mean, that would have sounded great.
Yeah, I think it would have. It would have sounded better to me, to my ears. Just that one instrument choice is kind of always great on me. It was all over the place in the '80s and the '90s, especially if you're, you know, a little too long in the theater after a Disney movie or something like that, and the songs playing is just
on the end credits. Yeah,
the end credits were always usually a duet, but it was, I don't know, that sort of sound never appealed to me too much. I don't know. I guess it's got its place, but yeah. Other than that, there's a few songs on this album that I think are probably worth the price of admission, I guess.
So, okay, so then what would be your three favorite songs on the album?
The ones that I think she probably did the best on, probably Saving All My Love for You, All at Once, and I guess How Will I Know. Those are probably the ones that belong to her, I think.
Yeah, those would be my picks as well. I would agree with that. Yeah, those were the ones. Like, How Will I honestly enjoyed How Will I Know. I thought that was actually a pretty good song. And like, I enjoyed the production on even the cheesy 80s synth. I thought it was fun.
Yeah, exactly. It's campy now.
But yeah.
But it actually came off really well on that song and stuff like that. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, like, that brings us to the question. I think I know the answer is, would you listen to this again?
I'm not too likely to listen to this again. Not in my own time. I can't think of a reason why it would come on. I probably not, just because it's not me. It's not my kind of thing. It's not a reflection on its quality. It's not a reflection on its coolness factor, maybe. I don't know. It's just not for me. So...
Yeah, I feel the same way. I probably wouldn't listen to it again either, and for the same reason. Like, it's just not my thing. But yeah, there you have it. So I guess we'll end the episode there. Thank you so much for listening if you made it this far. Don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss any future episodes, and we'd love to hear from you if you leave us a rating and a review, as it really helps new listeners find us. And if you want to support the show, you can go to our Patreon. Go to patreon.com/polyphonicpress, and there you can get these episodes a day before they go live. And you can also check out the website for you can listen to all the previous episodes and as well as get updates and other interesting things there. And I think that pretty much does it. I'm Jeremy Boyd.
I'm John Van Dyke.
Take it easy.